Benjamin Franklin once said, "Tell me, and I forget. Teach me, and I may remember. Involve me, and I will learn." Teachers are charged with preparing the next generation who will be tasked with being stewards of the world. Teachers can lecture about skills that are essential for adulthood. They can drill students and test them, or they can engage them in learning that makes a significant contribution to their community and the world in which they live. Abe Moore is a year 6-7 teacher at Hallett Cove South Primary School in Adelaide, South Australia. Abe has been awarded the Innovation in Education Award at the 2019 Educators State Awards. He engages his young learners in P-based learning, which includes project-based, problem-based, purpose-based, and passion-based learning that challenges them to make a difference in their school and community. You can follow him on Twitter at rbay38. In this episode, Abe shares how he challenges his students to imagine, design, and build the school they want to go to and impact future children who walk through those doors.
As an advocate of project-based learning, you've done some really incredible work with your students, from the Sparks and Stories to the Dear School with Linton. What is it about what is project-based learning, and how is it different from simply just doing projects?
I tend to think of P-based learning, which is what Iris Elko and Pam Moran and Chad Ratcliffe talk about in Timeless Learning. P-based learning being, you know, project-based, problem-based, purpose or passion-based. So for me, I tend to think it's more purpose-based in our kids. A difference, I guess, being projects should be open-ended. There's a quote that says that if you assign a project and you get back 30 of the exact same thing, it's not a project, that's a recipe. And very early on in my project-based learning, I was guilty of that as well. So kids were, you know, engaged and they were enjoying these projects we were doing, but we were ending up with 30 of the same things. And it was not trivial, but maybe tokenistic, some of the learning. And I wanted to move away from that. So, project-based learning is kind of what we shifted into. For me, project-based learning is really messy and really complex. It can't be micromanaged. So our big projects that we've taken on, like I can't micromanage those into being. It really is about trusting kids and giving them the agency and the voice to actually, you know, run with the things that they want to do. And our problem-based, project-based learning is more based around community. So I'd say it's probably closer related to experiential learning than project-based learning. Experiential learning for me is, you know, hands-on learning that has real outcomes in our community. So, you know, combining all of our talents and our time and our effort, we can do more good in our classroom together, collectively, than we can just doing these recipes that, you know, where we end up with 30 of the same thing.
Yeah, I know your kids do a lot to engage with the community, not just local, but globally. And that's one of the cool things that I'm inspired by your work is this, is you're teaching your kids or you're guiding your kids through not just becoming civically minded locally, but how can they engage with a greater world? That is so impressive.
Yeah, and I guess tech is a really big part of that. Since we had a real big go at some project-based learning a few years ago, but we didn't have the technology to back it up. We didn't have one-to-one devices. We didn't have opportunities for shared thinking online and opportunities to even speak to, you know, experts in the fields that kids were looking at. So it was really hard to manage that. And the big thing that I found over time is that I can't micromanage these projects. Like, it has to be driven by kids, otherwise they just don't come to fruition because I can't micromanage them into being. the kids have to own it. So yeah, I guess we've found over time that by having a community focus, it really allows every kid to find their niche within that. So we usually start with a big essential question. In the last couple of years, it's been, you know, how can we make our school a better place? And last year, the kids wanted to go down the route of play. So that's where Project Reimaginate came from. That's been a work in motion across 2 years. And last year was about transforming spaces outdoors. This year, they've shifted the same project, but with a focus on changing spaces inside. But the fact that we all are working towards a single goal, and then kids branch off into little groups and they follow their interests and their strengths and their wonderings in those groups to bring about change.
Why did you begin using project-based learning in your context? What is the appeal to, or what was the appeal to it?
Probably 10 years ago, one of my leaders suggested that I should move into more experiential and project-based learning. But I couldn't really get my head around how the kids could go off into different directions with their learning and how I could still grade it. So I was really hung up on the whole grading and really avoided doing experiential learning for that reason. And it took me a while to work out that project-based learning wasn't actually the barrier. It was my grading practices. Because at that school, we were very much about, you know, assessment. Assessment was everything. We had to be able to assess and assign, you know, grades and labels to everything we were doing. So I couldn't get my head around, well, okay, if we're going to spend all this time doing these projects and I can't assess it against the siloed subjects that I was teaching, then, you know, it just wasn't for me. So it took me a while to come around to that. And then I moved to my current school, and we're a really complex little school. We're only 120 kids. We are right on the doorstep of the Hallett Cove Conservation Park, which is where, you know, the coast of Australia once met Antarctica. So we've got this really amazing little park close by, and this really diverse group. About, I think, 30% of our students have a learning disability or a difficulty. So to come into this school and then try and just do a very traditional, siloed, based pedagogy, just it didn't work. I was just banging my head up against the wall, constantly trying to get kids to do my learning. So it just made sense to try and shift into co-designed learning. And that's obviously where, you know, you and I crossed paths, because I started going down the whole ungrading path. And that just led to the rabbit hole that is progressive education, and, you know, one thing led to another, and that's kind of where we've ended up with this experiential learning. We started off doing, you know, projects that lasted a day or two, where we just black out a whole couple of days, and that seemed fairly radical at the time. And then, you know, that became a week, and then that became a term, and the current project that we're working on, which is Project Reimaginate, is been spread across 2 years.
Wow. So, well, what is Project Reimaginate? I can't let that go.
Well, Project Reimaginate began when we simply asked an essential question of the kids: is, you know, how can we improve our school? And I honestly didn't know where we were going to go with it. But what the kids decided was that our playground was rubbish. They were really interested in, you know, how could we actually improve play at our school for all children, not just for us. So we just did this deep dive into what play is, and we became, you know, experts in play in our context, I guess. So Project Reimaginate started out, we started by auditing our play spaces and getting a sense of, you know, what play is. We did a lot of work and a lot of convincing in our community around that play is learning. So that was a big step for a lot of people to get their head around that play isn't just this, you know, thing that you do in between real learning as a relief from real learning. You know, play is the learning. And then from there, we engaged with like council and community organizations, and, you know, we mapped out and drew up plans for different spaces. including like a mud kitchen. We created a secret garden. It was like an outdoor classroom space. Scooters and bikes. We created this cornflower painted scooter track on a court, and we've been working to get bikes and scooters into our play all the time. And then we've got this beautiful big forest open space that just sits here. It's an out of bounds space and it doesn't get used. And it's just crazy that we have these sprawling grounds that, that don't get access for play or for formal learning. So trying to push our, you know, teaching, our educating community that, you know, you've got this amazing resource and we don't use it. We lock ourselves away in the four walls of our classrooms and deliver this content that, you know, could be really powerful if we bothered to step outside and take advantage of what we've got out there. So yeah, Project Reimaginate ended up, we needed an exhibition or an event. You know, we wanted people to be able to come and stand in the kids' learning and actually experience it. So we had what was called the Day of Play, and that was our exhibition day. So all the kids in the whole school, you know, our formal day of school was cancelled and we literally just played for the entire day. We had all of our spaces set up. We had, you know, members of our Department for Education and governments and different people come in and helped us, you know, plant some of the spaces, the scooter track. We had this blindfolded ropes course going through our forest space. We put up a horizontal climbing wall because we have all these retaining walls that kind of circle the school. So, yeah, and we just showed that, hey, this is what, you know, our play could actually look like if we could get the support to turn these into permanent features.
And how has this impacted your students? I mean, you mentioned that you have like 30% kids who are special ed. How has this impacted your students, maybe as individuals or as a community? What impact has this done, made?
Ira talks about having a direct instruction hour in Genius Weeks, and I love that. We started out with the whole Genius Hour idea, but it just wasn't enough. Like, kids just needed huge blocks of times to be able to struggle and collaborate and ideate just different ideas. So we kind of switched it on its head and we said, well, hey, here's some stuff in the curriculum that, you know, that we need to do. Here's a bit of, you know, direct instruction that we need to get through each day. And then largely we're turning the time over to kids. And that was massive because we do have kids who, you know, don't necessarily do a great job of sitting still for a long period of time. For some, reading and writing is a massive barrier. So we kind of came to this agreement that we would do these things that we needed to do, and then it's your time. So that then turns kids, it will gives kids the opportunity to start taking real control over their time. So they needed to start controlling, you know, their timetable of their day, of their projects. So mapping out how that might work. The use of space. So where am I learning in the classroom to actually, you know, be able to do the thing that I need to do, and with who? What technology, what tools do I need to use? And then the content itself. So, you know, kids bring the context into these huge projects that we do, and we plug in the content. And no two kids are ever going to get the same, you know, curriculum, the same content offering. It's simply a case of, well, what's most relevant for this child? What's the opportunity here for, you know, what I need to pull out of the curriculum to plug it into right now learning for them? And what that has meant for us, like the impact for me as a teacher is that, you know, we talk about having good problems and bad problems. So for me, bad problems are when, you know, the problems are based around not following instructions of the teacher or not getting work done on time or, you know, not having homework done. But we've removed all those barriers. Kids coming in and deciding if they're going to sit, where they're going to sit, you know, that's not even up for discussion. Kids have control over that. Kids have control over their time and they have control over their content. So these kids were fighting me on, you know, the things that they needed to do. Well, they ran out of things to fight me for. So then they had to start finding reasons for themselves. Well, I'm here and I see these things that other kids are doing. And then for kids themselves, the impact on kids, like I always think that it's a bit of a maybe not a loaded question, but I think we really have to ask kids themselves. So when we've made websites, I try and publish and I offer the opportunity to my kids that if they want to have a voice, I offer to publish their writing on my blog from time to time. So I think it's really important to hear from kids about what the impact is. So we're constantly circling back around, you know, when we're co-designing, when we're reflecting and feeding back on stuff to go, well, how are we going? Are we having an impact? Is this going where it needs to go? And then, you know, when we get to the end of either an exhibition or even just reporting time, you know, like I'm in the middle of reports right now. So the only way really that I felt comfortable being able to do this at this moment is because, you know, some of the tools that you had shared a while back, that kids are self-reporting in my class. It's happening, you know, assessment as learning is happening in our class right now. So I'm not locking myself away for 30 hours to report because the kids are largely doing a lot of that metacognitive work themselves.
Well, and so I'm gonna ask you, because I'm curious, how do you have kids report themselves? Like, what is the process?
Yeah, that was a real labor of love to get to the point where we are now. It took me a couple of years to get my head around how we might actually do this in a way that was credible, I guess. And essentially all I did was in the Australian curriculum, we have an achievement standard. And so I broke the achievement standard down into what I felt was its most important parts. And that basically broke all the subject areas down into, you know, between 12 and 16 outcomes. And then we kind of borrow a bit from a few other different styles of pedagogy. So like IB, we steal a bit from IB schools around self-assessment. And we just use a 1-4 scale of self-assessment where kids really, the number is just arbitrary because it really just reflects like a 1 would be I need more time to understand this, so I need to seek more support. A 2 would be I do my best learning when I'm collaborating or if I have, you know, use of an example. 3 would be I can do this on my own, but perhaps, you know, I make some errors along the way. And then a 4 is I can do this. I can share my solution paths or my ideas and opinions with others. I can teach this to others. So kids are often reflecting on those. And then we just use portfolios to collect their evidence over time. So our kids record their learning on Seesaw and in also like hard copy portfolios. And then we conference all the time, informally and then formally when it's time to report. And we do that, yeah, in class as learning. Mm.
Sounds very similar to what I do. A lot of my reporting is based on their ability level 2, like where are they within these realms. So I know you talked about project Reimagine. What are some other? I know you have a lot of really cool projects that you do with your kids. What are some other projects that you've done with your kids?
Yeah. About 3 years ago, we did Sparks and Stories, which started out as a collaboration with Mark Sonneman, the school he was at, and we were trying to create this cross-cultural conversation between kids, I guess. But then he abruptly had to move schools, and that kind of fell over. And we went, well, what can we do with this planning and learning we've done so far? And we decided to create Sparks and Stories, which was really just personal stories, and then a spark, which, you know, could have been an artwork, some family cooking. We had one young man who made a Tesla coil. That was really cool. But just something that grabbed people's attention and drew them over to actually read the story, which we had printed on these enormous sheets. But that wasn't enough. We also needed a reason to keep people in the room. So we transformed our gymnasium into this giant exhibition hall. And the kids actually built furniture. They built screens and LED cafe bar, coffee tables, and we set up this cafe in there, and they manned the cafe and sold coffee or sold gave away coffees and hot chocolates to families as so they could, you know, wander around our exhibition and just linger, and it was really powerful. And I still get nervous talking about it now because the vulnerability that the kids had in their writing was just incredible. Like they were bringing adults to tears in some instances with the power of their writing. So that was, yeah, that was a really powerful event. Project Reimaginate is in its second year now. We've shifted inside this year. We use a student voice framework to actually kind of guide where we go with some of this learning. Because every year kids will come into my class and they'll be like, well, you know, and parents as well, what big project are we doing this year? And I honestly don't know, because it's a real wait and see thing with the kids. I always have ideas about where we might go, but ultimately it has to be up to them. And people get really hung up on, you know, what amazing product will you produce? And, you know, that's really not what it's about. It's all about the process and the learning. And hopefully, you know, we get to a product that, you know, is something that is significant and meaningful in the community. But yeah, I never know what it's going to be.
You know, I love the fact that you say that, you know, the community wants to see what the end project is, but no, it's that process that they're going to remember forever.
Yeah, the product is just the tip of the iceberg. It's the thing that everyone sees, and no one ever sees like the struggle that goes into producing these things. Like it's incredible. And just giving kids the time and space within the day to be able to get to these things, I think, is something that goes largely missed. But isn't that cool that kids, you know, have done this thing, and it's almost like an anchor in time. Like it's a meaningful thing that they will take away from their school experience. And, you know, those opportunities and experiences, you know, that you carry with you. Like that's really what I'm trying to create in everything that we do in here.
Children are naturally curious, and they have the ability to come up with some amazing ideas. When adults trust and listen to young people, they discover that children are able to do incredible things. P-based learning makes school meaningful and engages young people in tasks that allow them to see their potential as citizens of a larger world. It helps them to discover who they are and the gifts they have to offer. All we have to do is believe in them. For more information about ABE, visit beyondthecurriculumpodcast.com and check out the show notes. If you enjoyed this program, be sure to hit the subscribe button, as you will want to catch each and every episode. And remember to leave a rating and review. I appreciate your support, and it helps others find the show. I'd like to encourage you to partner with me through my Patreon page. Your support helps offset the costs of producing this podcast and bring more meaningful opportunities that take learners beyond the curriculum.